Put that CB shucking gas.
All you racing fans, stand up, clap your feet. I mean, clap your heads.
Welcome to the Goat Rodeo.
Live from the CRN studios in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, this is Racing Through History.
Race fans, welcome to this edition of the Goat Rodeo. I be Jeff Gilder, and we got a bunch of goats. This is a rodeo. That's why they call it a Goat Rodeo. Thank you all for coming. We appreciate it more than you know. Let's get around and say hello to everybody. I'm going to try to figure out how to get Cody added into the stream here. He came on right as we were going live, so I'll have to get to him. Coastal Jack, start us off, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. Going to do a little Carolina Race Place historic race finish tonight from one of the tracks we visited quite often, Hickory, North Carolina.
Cool.
So that'll be coming up before too long.
Cool.
How about it, Bobby? What's going on
in the world of racing? Well, we had a big function this weekend at Carolina Speedway in Lakeview, and we'll talk about that some. We even had our own Tim Lemming on hand.
Yes, we did.
Corroborating testimony.
Great seeing you and Hugh in person.
Yeah, we had a big time at an old-timey place, didn't we, Tim?
Yeah, we sure did. It was just like you kept saying. It was the essence of what got us involved in the sport to begin with. Yep,
it has not changed. Now you've none. Seen
it. Hadn't changed since 1965.
Has not changed a lick.
y'all let people know that you knew who Tim was?
Not much.
Did you hang out with him? Or just
he hung out with us.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, Hugh was kind enough to let me do that.
That's the kind of dude.
Busy. It's the kind of dude he is.
Yeah, I know.
So how about it, Hugh? How about you, man?
Well, I had a good time Saturday night, in spite of the fact that Tim came.
Poor Tim.
We had everybody that I've talked to, and certainly everybody from our racing group, we had a real good time at Lakeview Speedway Saturday night. We had a good turnout of drivers and cars. It looked like the stands, they had a good turnout, and the track was in excellent condition. And we managed to run our 15-lap race with only one very short caution, which I thought was just stellar.
Man, speaking of stellar, I got the picture up on the side. That's the best color I've done yet, man. I have to brag on myself a little bit there.
Oh.
I don't have a whole lot of shine on Bobby's head.
you mean on the live feed video?
Anyway. All right, Mr. Leeming, talk to us, buddy.
Oh, I enjoyed Saturday night so much. Had a great time at Darlington on Sunday. Went with one of the guys I actually grew up with from a very young age, and the other guy we met when we were teenagers. And we decided to have a fling going back to a race since we hadn't done it in about 35 years together. So we piled in and went over to Darlington. Had a great time, great seats. So it was just a lot of fun for us. Just a good follow-up to Saturday nights.
That's cool, man. So still trying to add Cody. I don't know why his Skype just won't add, so I'm going to add him by phone here. Go ahead. Somebody carry on.
Tim?
Sir?
How long did you say it had been since the three of y'all got together?
got together for a race about 35, maybe 40 years. We were trying to discuss that on our way over to Darlington. We get together occasionally from time to time, but we had not done a race together in about 35 or 40 years.
Well, I'm going this coming Thursday. I'm leaving to go to Twin Lake, Michigan, to visit an old Army buddy that I haven't seen in 45 years. And I'm sure we'll be talking racing and old times and everything else. But I told him, I said, before we get so old that we can't travel, we need to visit back and forth a little bit. It's good to keep up old acquaintances.
It is.
And the older I get, the more important things like that become.
Cody, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. Now if I can just get Tim added back. I dumped Tim to get you in here. Now I can't get Tim back. Cody, is it getting cool down in Dawsonville?
Yeah, it's getting cool. And actually right now it's storming pretty bad. It was actually dropping some hail about 15 minutes ago.
Wow.
Hail.
Hail, yeah. Yeah. Well, Cody, are people getting excited that maybe that siren might ring in Dawsonville again one of these days?
Yeah, I think he's got a little bit better shot now. I mean, it's just the momentum of it. The momentum of him getting number 9, actually, I was very surprised at it, but I read it, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday that it was announced, and I was just extremely shocked because, you know, I thought as soon as he'd get in the 24, he was there for life.
All right, so somebody else talk. Cody, I got to dump you. I'll be back.
So, Jack, how many years did you have box seats at Darlington? You bought a box.
Yeah, I had two boxes, Bobby.
At one time.
At one time. It started out in about 1975 or 6. I had a friend that had a box that I went with, the guy from Florence. And the next year, he decided he was going to get out of having that box. He'd had it for several years. So I took over that box.
Oh.
And then about three or four years later, I had so many friends that wanted to go, I bought two boxes, had 40 seats. Yeah, I think it was number 42 and number 43, or 43 and 44.
Or the lower deck.
Upper.
I never sat in the upper deck. We always was in the lower deck.
Was that on the old front stretch?
Yeah.
No.
No, it's on the old back stretch.
Which is now
the front stretch.
Okay.
Yeah, the boxes are on the back stretch.
And I had those for years, and then I started cutting it back down to one. Then I took half a box and got down to four seats.
They would put your name on the front. They had a little sign on the front.
Yeah,
part of the door say Jack M. Walker.
No, it did not.
CJ.
It did not. It did not have a sign on there.
Ours did.
No, it had there was a sponsor sign on it. I can't remember what it was. Some local auto parts place in Florence.
I think it was Advance Auto Parts. Even
a
back
little
then.
Tiny sign.
But yeah, they had signs on them.
Mic check. Cody, you there?
Yes.
Say Jack right. Walker.
Tim's there.
Myrtlehead, South Carolina.
I'm here.
Well, it sounds like everybody's home.
We did have one year a highway patrolman. You know, there was a little area in the back you could actually sit on that wasn't a seat. It was right before the little chicken wire around the back of it. And a highway patrolman came up there and sat there, and somebody handed him a beer. I looked around, he was drinking a cold beer.
Them things was in the air.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And they was in the elements.
It was good seat, man. It was good
seat.
But
you still could not see the cars. When they come by on the back stretch, you could not see them.
You could see the tops.
You could see the tops.
And if people were sitting down, you could see maybe a little bit of the wind area.
Yeah.
If
they were sitting down.
And on the front stretch, you could just see the tops of the cars. So really all you could see was the first and second turn.
Now, before that, Bobby, what my friends and I used to do, we used to go to Darlington and buy the $8 seats, I think it was, and go sit on the bank coming out of what would have been turn number two. Yeah.
Yeah, the old second turn.
Yeah. Right by there was a sign up there. I think it said R.C. Cole or something like that.
Yeah, close to the tunnel.
We used to sit right there by that sign. Yep. As a matter of fact, there's some of the old pictures of when little Bud Moore ran into the back of Junior Johnson. Right, if you look and see some people on the on that hill, one of them's me.
Some of them's me. So you was first there in 1958, right?
1958, first Southern 500 I went to.
The year that about three different people went out of the park.
Yep, Eddie Pagan was one of them.
But one of them.
Jack Smith
was one.
And somebody else. And,
one time they tore down so much guardrails they just told the drivers, y'all be careful.
Y'all be careful. I remember hearing that story.
Yep.
Y'all be careful. There's a hole there. Don't drive through it.
Miss it. Yeah.
That Eddie Pagan crash was one of the first ones ever photo documented in such a sequential type of form. It was how he didn't get killed is a miracle. The wreck looked worse than it actually was.
Yeah, and the year before that, 57, I did not go to the race in 57, but the Grand National at Coastal Speedway was right before Darlington in 1957, and Eddie Pagan was there from California with a trailer, and that was the first time I'd ever seen a race car really on a trailer.
Yeah, well, they used to tow, you know, Grand National cars, even in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That was the first time I ever saw one on a trailer. It was 1957.
Yeah, they were flat-towed with a tow bar for a long, long time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And then they towed them with a pickup truck, an old single-axle trailer, and they always looked so unstable going down the road because the truck wasn't big enough to really be pulling a trailer and a car. Actually, I guess the first one that I ever saw that looked like it ought to be, that it fit, was when the Petties had a single-axle box truck, big old Dodge. There's a picture somebody posted some time back of, who was it, Petty and Dale Inman walking away from that hauler. It was a big old stub nose. Dodge.
You talking about the one that said Plymouth on the side, that Dodge
about
on the
1970
side?
Or
yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And then they had a decent sized tandem axle trailer. It was still an open trailer because they put car cover on the car and towed it on that trailer. But golly, they had a box truck to put all their stuff in.
And then around the mid-60s, they began to use those ramp trucks.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I always thought those ramp trucks were the coolest thing to see going down the highway.
The Ford teams had them a lot. They had them cab-over Ford.
Exactly.
They didn't have a lot of extra room in them, not nearly as much as using a box truck and a trailer. But you're right. They really looked good going down the road.
They sure did.
Especially if they were really a high-dollar team, they'd have one on the ramp truck and then be pulling a trailer with the spare. It wasn't really a spare. It was just another car for somebody else to drive. And if if either one of them wrecked, then they had the other one to fall back on. They'd come a long way. I can remember in the, I guess, late 70s, early 80s was when they started with the tractor trailers. And man, that was a big deal, and they were just box trailers that they built ramps in, and then of course they've got that fancy two-story rig that everybody has now. That's what, $2 million? That they put two cars in the top of it, and then they got all of their office up on the step up and their parts and tools. Of course, really, there's not a whole lot in that one except the pit box. What they don't tell you about is that two or three other standard box trailers that are out there in the parking lot that have got everything else they need on it.
Yeah.
There's a whole traveling circus that goes that you don't see, that it's not in the hauler parade.
Oh, yeah.
Just plain old unmarked tractor trailers.
Tim.
Yes, sir.
Didn't you go in 1957 to Darlington?
Yes, sir.
But did you see the Bobby Myers crash?
Bobby, that happened right in front of me because that's what we parked in the infield at turn three.
Is that where it was at turn three?
And it was so terrible that I actually mentally blocked it out. But when I saw it about 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, a friend of mine had a DVD that had that accident on it. And I saw it on the DVD. I mean, it was like immediate transport back to getting my fingers on that fence wire in turn three and seeing it all over again.
Now, something that in looking at that video, which that's all I've ever seen, is, but you can look at the video and look at it and look at it and not see the spectacularness of the Paul Goldsmith part of that wreck. Because you're looking at Bobby Myers, but Paul Goldsmith was about equally spectacular. And he walked away.
When it refreshed my memory of the accident, it was like one of those horrid flashbacks that you hear about people having. And, I mean, when I saw the video, it just was so bad for me because I was, 57. At that time, I was 11 years old, and I had never seen anybody really get killed in front of me. You know, you just didn't expect that to happen, especially at races.
How soon did the crowd know that of the fatality of the wreck?
I think some of the adults that were standing around close to where I was standing at the fence, they knew when they saw them taking Myers out of the car that he was gone. I mean, they just knew that. You know, I knew it a little bit later. I mean, they confirmed it a little bit later. You know, they would not announce it on the PA system. But somebody came around and said, yeah, he was killed. Ambulance took him off. So,
now,
you know, it's one of those kind of things that, you know, you really don't forget it. And, you know, if I had been there in 65, that Buren skiing accident would have happened right in front of me, but I didn't go in 65 because the Mopars boycotted, and I honored the boycott.
But watch that video again, and this time look for Paul Goldsmith. It's a black 57 Ford doing end-over-end flips because he hit Bobby Myers hit Fonny Flock, and so did Paul Goldsmith. Because, you know, he was behind, Goldsmith was right behind him. But they both had the similar results. And Paul Goldsmith, this has been in September of 57, he won the 58 beach race. A few months later, him and Smokey Udick won the beach race in 1958.
In a Pontiac. Number three. Black and gold.
And Smokey sold it immediately after the race to Cotton Owens. Drove it back to his shop on the road and sold it to Cottonwood and took no money. He said, just get it out of here before the Pontiac people do, before they get here. You just take it and pay me later.
I don't think I'd ever heard that story. Maybe. But
Smokey has a lot of stories. I'm reading that triple book that he did. His autobiography, and I'm just getting into the good end of the first book, but I'm having a ball reading it. I'm reading it word for word and practically memorizing it. Smokey Udick led a very interesting life, to put it politely.
Well, you know, I've read the one book, The Best Damn Garage in Town, and
that's
you know,
it.
The way that book was written,
that
it seems
it.
That's put it. All three books into one.
Yeah, you're exactly right. They first made three books, and then they made one that's all of them together.
Okay.
So, yeah,
I thought I was going crazy.
No, if you've got the one book, that encompasses all of them.
Bobby, you talked about that 58 Pontiac. Cotton Owens later destroyed that Pontiac at Darlington in time trials for the Southern 550.
Dargan Watts recently had a picture of that car in the pits at Darlington.
Yep.
I think they had just changed the number on it because it still was black and gold and everything.
I think it was still number three.
It might have been.
Because I think Cotton brought two cars to Darlington in 58. One of them was the red and white 57 Pontiac that Joe Eubanks drove. And that was number six.
All right, it's time for a Carolina Race Place historic race finish. Coastal Jack, take it away, buddy.
We can do it tonight for the Carolina Race Place historic race finish. We are going back to one of the tracks that we've been to several times, Hickory, North Carolina, Hickory Speedway. On Saturday night, May 4th, 1974, Hickory Speedway held a 200-lap late model sportsman race. The race was titled the North Carolina Late Model Sportsman Championship and was run on the famous 3/8-mile paved oval. To start off the evening, Tommy Houston of Conover, North Carolina, won the pole position with the fastest lap around the 3/8-mile oval. Before the 200-lap feature race, there was a limited sportsman race, which was won by Jerry Fox. When the late model sportsman race took the green flag, Tommy Houston quickly took the lead from his pole position starting place. Houston set the pace with Ray Hendrick and Grand National driver Bobby Isaac closely behind. Houston's lead came to an end on lap 42 when his engine in his Chevelle erupted. Ray Hendrick of Richmond, Virginia, became the new leader on lap 43. Around lap 100, Bobby Isaac, who had been running near the front of the pack, retired to the pits with mechanical problems. Bob Presley of Asheville, North Carolina, had mechanical problems, and Harry Gant of Taylorsville, North Carolina, had an overheating engine problem that also happened around the halfway point. Hendrick was still leading on lap 187 when Larry Wallace spun out coming off the fourth turn right in front of the leader. Hendrick made a quick defensive move to the inside, almost clipping the pit wall, but was able to get by. After the caution period, Ray Hendrick again continued to lead. Hendrick led the rest of the way to the checkered flag on lap 200. He won $1,200 for the victory. Hendrick also won a similar race the night before at Metrolina Speedway in Charlotte. So here's the way they finished. May 4th, 1974, Hickory Speedway 200-lap late model sportsman race. The winner, driving the number 11, Ray Hendrick, Richmond, Virginia, in a Chevelle, followed by Glenn Hoke, Hickory, North Carolina, Kenneth Wilson, Hickory, North Carolina, Clarence Ogle, Swannanoa, North Carolina, J.H. Callaway, Jr., Ed Bodges, Elkin, North Carolina, Jerry Rainier, Larry Wallace, Pineville, North Carolina, Jim Poovey, Hickory, North Carolina, Bob Presley, Asheville, North Carolina, Ronald Fox, Taylorsville, North Carolina, Wayne Ellis, Lincoln, North Carolina, Bobby Isaac, Catawba, North Carolina, Boyce Eckert, Hickory, North Carolina, Tommy Houston, Conover, North Carolina, Harry Gant, Taylorsville, North Carolina, Morgan Shepherd, Conover, North Carolina, Ernie Klein, Hudson, North Carolina, and finishing in the 19th and final position, Junior Crouch, Taylorsville, North Carolina. So that's the way they finished. May 4th, 1974.
I think it was this past week it was the Bobby Isaac Memorial Race at
Yes,
Hickory.
It was. It certainly was.
It was very, if it wasn't, it was the weekend you know, before.
It was this past week, I think.
The 41st annual.
I think
Bobby
Josh
Isaac.
Berry won it, if I remember seeing a news report.
I didn't realize they had had 41 years, I guess yeah. It has been.
Wow.
Remember, that would have been 1976.
That makes us old.
Yeah, it does.
Take it away, Mr. Bob.
Okay, I want to, we mentioned earlier about the our activity Saturday night at the Carolina Speedway, and I would like to touch on that just a little bit. This was a track, it's very much in our area. It's at Lakeview, South Carolina. Really, it's at Nichols. More than Lakeview, but everybody calls it Lakeview. Just up Highway 9 from here, and for most of this year, well, for all of this year, it had been inactive, partly because of Hurricane Matthew really affected that particular area. That was part of the problem, and other issues, and the track owners and management just decided not to open this year. As time went on, they had a change of heart and wanted to run one race on Labor Day, and that was, of course, this past Saturday. And this has been kind of a rumor ever since, for several months now, the possibility of a Labor Day race and at Lakeview. And I had asked early on when I first just heard of the rumor, could the vintage cars be on the program if it ever come to pass? And one thing led to another, and, you know, all of it did happen. Of course, also along the way that nobody could have predicted was we lost Little Bud Moore in the process as time unfolded. And so our group decided, why not have a vintage race and just name it in his honor, just have it for remembering Little Bud. That was such a place that was so natural to Little Bud Lakeview, the dirt tracks, out of the limelight is where he come from. It was a great setting. And so our race was the Little Bud Moore Memorial Vintage Classic. And we had that at Saturday night, had a good turnout. We even had, mentioned earlier, we had the legend Tim Lemming on hand to witness the festivities. Little Bud's family, his wife and daughter, and several friends and other family members all made the trip up from Charleston to be part of it. And Little Bud's daughter, Sherry, she wrote on her Facebook page the next day, she said, "The clay was good for my soul." So I thought that was that meant a lot. That said a lot. That, you know, sometimes you have to go backwards to go forward. And that was his kind of place. On the positive note, I didn't know what to expect about, you know, the track, like you coming back open and everything, and we still don't know how that will turn out, but it was a tremendous turnout, not just for us, but for all the divisions, a lot of cars, a lot of excitement, had a pretty good crowd in the stands, had a great crowd in the infield. The track, which hadn't been raced on this whole year, was just superb. It was in excellent condition.
The track was in better shape for this race than any track we've raced on all year.
I declare it was. And so it was, a real positive night. I mean, all across the board, I thought it was very good. And, you know, a common theme of us here at the Goat Rodeo is we can't afford to lose any more racetracks.
Amen.
You know, we just can't. Eventually you go below critical mass, and, you know, we've said this forever and I'm gonna keep on saying it, you can't assume racetracks will be there. You can't do that no more. You know, back in the day they were always closing, but they was always opening.
Yeah,
remember
that another promoter would take over the same track, or there would be another one open 2 miles down the road.
Yeah, it was so.
That's
there was
not so today.
You never felt a net loss because there was always, you know, you got ticked off and run for, well, I'll just go to another track. Well, that's not an option no more. And without race tracks, there can't be a sport. I mean, it's like if football, if they started outlawing fields, they haven't. If they started closing, you know. You can't have a sport without a venue to play on. That is so basic, but it cannot be taken for granted. So losing Lakeview, or the apparent loss of Lakeview, was a real warning sign for a lot of people, me especially, and to maybe we don't know what the future holds, but we are much more excited and have more reason for hope now than we did. So you know, that has to be a positive.
The owner made a little speech at the driver's meeting, and he wouldn't be very specific, but he certainly was positive about the track's future. He certainly wasn't negative. Several people asked him questions about, well, when's the next race? Are we going to have a card next year, et cetera, et cetera. And he wouldn't directly answer the questions, but he certainly put a positive spin on his answers to lead at least me to believe that that there will be a future for Lakeview.
He can't say there won't be a future and keep his grandfather status.
That's right.
Well, I suppose that's true too. But he made the statement that he personally enjoyed it very much, and he appreciated the turnout Saturday night very much. And he can be kind of a grumpy old man sometimes, but I think that he genuinely meant what he said and was pleased with the night, which bodes well for the future of it, whoever runs it.
You know, we've all, lots of us have, are aware of the steep, almost not impossible hill to build a new track. If you're going to go out today, tomorrow, and say, I want to build a racetrack, my suggestion would be good luck. Good luck. I mean, good luck getting through the politics and the red tape.
I can't even remember the last track built in South Carolina.
How many years did they try to build a track in New York and finally just threw up their hands after millions of dollars spent, finally just threw up their hands and walked away?
Or North Carolina, for that matter.
Well, that's
NASCAR can't even do it.
Yeah, nobody can.
They can't do it. They don't have enough clout to get through. It has somewhere along the way, we really lost the political battle, the racing community. We became worse than redheaded stepchildren. You know, no politician wants to be aligned with the racers.
That's sad but true.
Yeah, that is very true. So, you know, we ran into that firsthand trying to reopen a go-kart track in rural Columbus County. Yep. The community
Holy
cow, they came out with a hatchet in both hands. And, you know, not in my backyard. And it was totally rural and, you know, just rural farmland.
The thing that I noticed about that was that not one person from Columbus County spoke for it. Mm-hmm. Everybody that lived in Columbus County that spoke against us. Every person.
Yep. So anyway, we say all that to say that, you know, if we lose a racetrack, if the racing community loses a track, chances are it's gone forever. It cannot be replaced. So I don't know where that. Well, I do know where that ultimately will end. But that is a concern. That's you know, we can't assume that they can be built. We just can't. So anyway, having said all that, it was a reassuring and positive and hopeful what happened this weekend in our little corner of the world. So,
and we had to add to that, we had a really good race.
Yep. So
we had a good field. We had two first time rookies. Two very, very fast pro mods and a bunch of very fast modifieds all running in the same group, and everybody minded their manners, paid attention. We had one little minor caution, just a racing incident. Somebody moved up at the same time one moved around, and one of them touched the wall. He ended up having to be towed off because his steering was broken. But other than that, I had a clean race, and to be running all the classes together and having two guys that had never run a race before, never sat in a race car, I think they did amazingly well.
Yeah, so, yeah, we were tickled. We really were. So, all right.
All right, Hugh, take it away, bud.
Hey, I don't have a whole lot other than what we've just been talking about. I've been the last few weeks making some notes, not notes, but mental notes of the sponsor exodus in NASCAR. And it's almost staggering to me the number of sponsor exoduses we've had, from the trucks all the way up to Cup. I think the net result is going to be a much leaner, much less aggressive Cup series next year. It looks to me like the money's just not going to be there. I'm not so sure that's a bad thing. I'm kind of looking forward to it in the fact that maybe, just maybe, the little guy working out of his garage might have a chance again. They certainly haven't for the last 20 years, but just maybe the little independent might have a chance in this sponsorless. And the sponsors are leaving for a variety of reasons, but nonetheless, they're still leaving. And some of them I can't blame them, and some of them I think are real petty. But I'm personally very concerned as to whether or not the Truck Series is going to survive.
The rumor is that this is the last year it's going to make it. That's just a rumor, of course.
Well, I can certainly see how that got started, because they is the title sponsor going to come back? Does anybody know? There's been a lot of, without getting into it, there's been a lot of political stuff on that side. There are several, Red Horse Racing has shut its doors. I understand, and I don't have anything to substantiate it, but I understand that Brad Keselowski said that he's not going to field trucks next year out of his stable.
Yeah, I said that, yeah.
So if it survives at all, it's going to be quite different. But I tend to believe that the Truck Series is not going to make it. I always have thought that maybe three was too many. It's hard to have three races at a track on a weekend, and then if you split it up and run two races at Darlington and one in Kansas City or wherever, that doesn't do well. So maybe they'd be better off with only two to concentrate on. And I understand that they're taking the Jackman away next year in Cup.
I don't think that's official, is it, yet? They've thrown it out there.
I've heard it talked about. I don't know whether it is or isn't. I don't think that's a bad thing.
I don't think it is either.
That's one less person over the wall. That eliminates one job from each team. I understand that. But the Jackman is in a rather precarious position in the fact that he has to be, especially on the outside, he has to be further away from the car than anybody. And that's a dangerous position to be in.
So what are they going to, like,
IndyCar jacks?
IndyCar jack, air, hydraulics?
Yeah, well, air, hydraulic, whatever. I don't know. I don't know any of the particulars, and I don't know that it's official, but that's the rumor, that they're going to do away with the Jackman and use onboard jacks. That's as much as I know about it.
Smokey Unic wanted to do that back in the 60s. Uh-huh. They wouldn't let him.
Of course. Well, they were afraid that he'd have even more of an advantage than he already had. They certainly wouldn't. That was always almost amusing to me, being on the outside looking in at that, how much rancor there was between Bill France and Smokey Unic, especially from Bill to Smokey. And of course, you know, they talked about Smokey bought a helicopter and he would take it and fly over the track. They said that Bill, that would just send Bill Sr. into hysterics when he flew his helicopter over. And I read in Smokey's book that he actually, Bill Sr. actually had Smokey arrested at one of the races. gonna throw him out until he realized that people had seen it and how bad that would look politically. So he had him turn him loose.
how big of a crew does a team bring to the racetrack today? I know what the over-the-wall people are, but what about the people, the other guys?
It's I haven't been in the pits to count, but I would say there's probably close to 20.
All together.
Wow. But so many of them are like, you've got a tire specialist.
Yep.
You've got two or three engine, the big team, two or three engineers. You've got all that. You've got one person whose only job is to work with shock absorbers. To me, that's getting a little out of hand. But
all right. Next. Cody,
who's
you next? Got, buddy?
All right. So I don't know if I'm going to be taken away from any from Tim's segment here, but I just kind of wanted to talk about Darlington and how much I thoroughly enjoyed the race. So Darlington and Daytona, I'd say, are the only two races I pretty much watch flag to flag per year. And so, you know, I recorded it, brought it home, and watched the entire race flag to flag, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I love the throwback weekend. I think they're doing a fantastic job with that. I think this year was the highest number of cars they had in a throwback scheme. I think there's only five that didn't. And I gotta say, I'm not a big Denny Hamlin fan, but I really enjoyed watching the Ray Hendrick car, you know, do well. I thought that was very cool. So I thought they were doing a fantastic job, and I think whoever thought of the throwback weekend a couple years ago should have a really big promotion. I mean, I just feel like it's a step in the right direction. And you know, I'd like to go next year or sometime in the future, and you know, I just hope that it can continue to be as successful as it is and still bring history back to the sport, and recognize a lot of the people that the younger fans may not have known of in the past. But that's about it for me. Just
that was
my
good,
thoughts,
man.
On Darlington.
I like that. I'll just say this. You ever get that close to Myrtle Beach, you're going to have to come in here.
Well, that's I'll make a deal with you on that one.
All right. Cool beans. All right, Timothy, take it away, sir.
Okay, yeah, pick it up on Darlington. No, Cody, you didn't take anything I was going to say, because I was going to talk about the special feeling of returning that track after, I guess, 15 or 16 years of not being there. But first, I want to reiterate what Bopper and Hugh have already said about Saturday night. It couldn't have been a much better situation. That track was as perfect as any clay track I've ever seen. And all the people with the Cape Fear Classic or vintage cars or whatever, it was just, it was wonderful being around all of y'all. I missed getting down to see Jim Wilmore. When I went down to where his car was, he wasn't there. But that was great being there Saturday night. Now, as for Darlington, when we got over there Sunday afternoon about 3 o'clock, got parked and walked down to the track, and we took the tour of all the souvenir trailers just to see, you know, what was there. And I think, naturally, of course, Junior had more people at his trailer than anybody else. And Kyle Busch was probably second. But I was amazed, I think, at Ricky Stenhouse and Dave Blaney had huge crowds at their trailers. And we got there at the same time that Brad Keselowski was being interviewed on the Ford Racing stage right outside the track. And that was very interesting to listen to him talk about what they've done. And Penske Racing has signed, just re-signed, a 5-year contract with Ford. So they will be back in Fords for 5 years. Also, I found out, talking about sponsorship, that the Fifth Third Bank that sponsors, who is that?
Ricky Stenhouse.
Who is that, Cody?
Ricky Stenhouse, isn't it?
Stenhouse.
Yeah.
They just re-upped their commitment for 5 years. So I think, you know, as even with the exodus of so many of the major sponsors, some of them still see something out there. But all right, being at Darlington, going into the grandstands to begin with, and this is indicative of whatever, they had a band or whatever you want to call them, and I never was quite sure exactly what the band was, what the group was, because it was such a cacophony of nothingness but loud noise that I was so glad.
You called it
when
a cacophony.
They shut the hell up and moved that stage away from the track. I mean, anything would have sounded better than they did. And they
surely you're not talking about the Oak Ridge
really
Boys.
Do what?
I said, surely you're not talking about the Oak Ridge Boys, are you?
No, not the Oak Ridge Boys. This was a two-race show. No, the Oak Ridge Boys were great. But, you know, we were sitting up there. We were 13 rows up from the track, and we were right across from where Danica Patrick and Jimmy Johnson were pitting, and right dead in front of us was the Richard Petty 1967 Plymouth. And we saw Richard walking around. I don't think I knew that he intended to get in that car and drive it until he actually got in it. And when he fired up that car, that was a sound like I haven't heard in a lot of years coming from a racetrack.
That's a real race car sound.
The other 40 of them, it didn't make near the noise a Hemi did. But they started out on the track, of course, when they came back off at turn four and you could look down into the windshields, you could see those bright, white, petty trademark teeth grinning from ear to ear. He was having a ball out there. That's why he took a couple extra laps,
yes,
I'm sure.
Yes.
But, you know, all in all, the event was great. I think the racing, for the most part, I wouldn't rate it as high as some of the races I've seen in the past many years ago, but I would rate it as high or higher than anything I've seen recently in a long, long time. Kyle Larson was certainly doing a good job until he encountered whatever problems it was he had. But again, we get back to the situation where all of a sudden nothing on a track can touch a Toyota. And how they started out the first part of the year having such issues that they couldn't outrun their own shadow. And now they're outrunning and dominating everybody else. Also, I think being able to watch all the cars come into the pits on the green flag and yellow flag situations, the pit crews nowadays are amazing. I just can't believe how fast they move and how quickly they get things done and go on. But the crowd where we were sitting in the Wallace grandstands, we had to the right of us, there were probably 35 or 40 college students and probably upper class high school students that were really enjoying the race, so they were all over there. We had older than I, people behind us that were enjoying the race. And we had people sitting around of all ages, so it was a very mixed group of people, which I would not have believed had I not seen it myself. So the appeal to the millennials or whatever they're trying to do is apparently working, at least from what you could see at Darlington. But again, I think the key there is, like you said, Cody, it's the throwback, because people like me go to see it because that's what we loved at the time. A lot of the young people come to see it because they may have heard about it, but they never saw the cars like the, you know, the Bobby Allison Miller Buick, but they had one, not the Miller car, but it was painted up like Bobby Allison's car was out there, and the old Rusty Wallace Miller Lite Ford, black with that yellow number two, or gold number two, that was out there. And all in all, it was a really good race. I still really dislike burnouts. And since Denny Hamlin decided to do his right in front of where we were sitting, I triply dislike burnouts. It was just disgusting. But to watch that little pinhead get out of the car, you know, it was just like, he deserved to win that race. I'm not going there. But it was great to be back in Darlington. It was great to be back with two old friends I had not really gone and done things with in a long, long time. And we had a great time there. Hats off to the South Carolina Highway Patrol for the way they directed traffic out of that place, because the parking was very, very full all the way down. I guess we were parked a good mile from the track in the Darlington parking lots. But the South Carolina Highway Patrol did a great job of getting everybody out of there. So certainly hats off to them. Back in the old days when we went to motorhome, it would take hours upon hours to get out of there. And this time it was, got in, we went around to the back of the line and eased our way up. Once we got out of the parking lot onto the highway, it was go. And man, we were gone. But I'm very pleased with what Darlington represents. I'm very pleased with what Darlington means to NASCAR and the racing world in general. And it's like sitting there, I think the first probably 20 minutes I was sitting in that seat, other than the loud, distracting cacophony of crap, you know, it was like just sitting there remembering the 57 race and the 59 race and 60, and, you know, all the races from back in the 60s and 70s where I'd been in the infield. Nowadays, you don't get in the infield. There's nothing in there, apparently, but haulers and drivers' motorhomes. But still, to Darlington, Kerry Tharpe, great job that you did. Everybody at Darlington did a really great job with it. I probably will not be back again, not because I did not enjoy myself, But I think nowadays it's just it's a little bit of a strain to walk that far and to sit that long and just to put up with some of the drunks. We had a guy that was sitting four rows in front of us wearing a Kyle Busch cap and a Kyle Busch shirt, and he was drinking beers faster than Toyotas were wearing out tires. And he would come up the steps, and I was sitting on the end of the row, and every time he came up the steps, he'd stumble, and his hand would go down my shoulder. So I came home with a bruised shoulder for sure. You know, and we're not going to talk about the lady in the white shorts. I'll save that for another time. But all in all, Cody, you were right. It was a fabulous race, I think, even though at times I thought it was being a little stacked stage racing, being there in person. I absolutely detest it. It's one thing to watch it on television, and it's another thing to sit there and watch them throw that flag and everybody come in the pits and all the little cleaning vacuum cleaners go out and start cleaning up the track. And there were, what, five laps or so they run yellow. I don't like that. Don't think I ever will like it. And by the way, Brian France, since you started this stage point stuff to help hype up the competition, how does it feel to have your regular season champion already locked it up at Darlington? He doesn't even have to run Richmond if he doesn't want to. So how does that feel, Brian? You did a good job with that, even up the competition, didn't you, buddy? Yeah, work on that for next year and see what you can come up with. Thank you, Jeff. Back to you.
Really sound cool. To me like he got just what he wanted, a Toyota victory.
And Cody, I just now saw your text, so if you've got more, you can go now.
No, I thought I was going to take longer than that anyway.
Go ahead, Cody. I know you got some more.
I didn't realize Cody had texted me and said, can I go last? I might have a long one. But anyway.
No, Cody. We got 10 minutes.
Tim. 8 minutes. Yes. I know exactly what you meant by hearing that petty car crank up. There's 20 years ago, there was no better sound than the sound that you got about 3 seconds after the gentleman start your engine's yes. command.
Yes.
And there was no better place, as far as I was concerned, than to be within a few feet of the cars when that happened.
Right. And I always was, because I was there on press credentials. But, you know, the thing with these new engine sounds, they don't sound anything like what we were used to.
They sound more like the old Indy cars did.
In the 80s. I don't know what they really sound like, but for all my years of going to races, you know, for the night on the way home and the next day, maybe my ears would ring, you know, that good little feeling you get mm-hmm. when you know you've been to a race and yep. you know.
And you can't hear good for 3 days after.
Ears come from. Boy, this time my ears were like, I don't know, they were just stopped up or something, because it wasn't anything like the good engine sounds we had.
Nope.
It was just a different kind of was a whine. And you can't tell it on TV, and you also on TV, you can't perceive the actual speed that these cars are going.
But you can't perceive the speed, and you can't smell them.
Oh, we love the smell of it. But it was going by, as they were going by in front of us, you couldn't even tell who it was. Nope. They'd go by so fast. You know, you'd have to wait till they'd get in a turn and get a good look at the car to see who it was.
Tim, if you think that was fast, you should have been with us at Volusia County. What was it, 2 years ago, Bobby? We're down there for the for that race. You couldn't even see them. We were on the front stretch, and you couldn't see them good on the back stretch. They ran so fast on, what was it, a half-mile track? Half-mile dirt, and it was just
sprint cars.
It was just absolutely mind-boggling to see how fast they were going, or not see how fast they were going. You couldn't focus on them going on the front stretch at all. Your eye just simply would not move that fast.
Yeah, and, you know, it was hard for me with my vision in the state it is right now, and them having cars painted the different colors from what I'm used to seeing on TV. It was very, very hard for me to tell, you know, who was doing what. I had to catch them as they were coming off of turn, what is it now, turn two. I had to catch them then and tell by the colors, because I couldn't read the numbers. But, you know, all in all, it was an exciting race. I didn't particularly like the outcome. but for 500 miles, and it was just simply good being back in Darlington.
Amen. I know the feeling. That's like going all the way from Winston-Salem to Daytona to watch Waldrip win one year.
Oh, gross.
You had to say that.
Yep.
Well, old Waldrip got his minute of fame down at Darlington. They marched him out across the stage. You know, he waved. I'll tell you what, though. I watched the drivers come down off stage. And Ryan Blaney, my memory's just going. Ryan Blaney, the kid that won Daytona for the Webb Brothers.
Trevor Bayne.
Matt DiBenedetto and Cole Whitt, those four I noticed especially came down off the stage, and they mingled with the crowd and were signing autographs and just really enjoying their time with the crowd. All the rest of those guys come down off that stage and just get the hell out of my way, I'm out of here. You know, which I guess before a race I can understand, but still, that was kind of watching those four, it was kind of like it used to be when we'd go to the races. I mean, you could talk to the drivers right up till they got the car.
It was it's interesting to see the different personalities of the drivers being down where I was all those years. You get to see who some of the drivers simply wanted to be left alone. We had one driver in particular that would literally hide under our stage. He didn't want to talk to anybody.
And now who was that?
I don't want to say. Wouldn't be fair to him, but. It wasn't that he was concentrating on the race, and he didn't want to be distracted. He was a nice guy, and he was personable and friendly. But before the race, don't bother me. I'm got my blinders on. I want to be. And there were a couple of them that way. But this one in particular would literally raise up the skirt on our stage and crawl under there and sit on my toolbox.
Well, I know both Fred Lorenzen and Fireball Roberts were pretty much like that.
Some of the drivers are that way. Some of them, you know, Richard was a real good example, would go out of his way to stop and talk to the fans and mingle with the fans and shake hands and give autographs. And, you know, most of them fell somewhere in between. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they were interested in talking to the fans. Other times you could tell that they weren't. I was partially responsible for keeping the press at bay in part of the my assignment. And you could kind of tell the drivers that wanted to walk over to them and the ones that didn't. And I knew that. I tried to, if I could, stand between them so that they didn't have to, the ones that didn't want to. But it's interesting to see how it's evolved over the years. The fact that they put the drivers in the trucks or the cars or the convertibles and take them a lap around the track, I thought was a really good idea for putting the drivers out to the fans. It wasn't designed for that. It was designed to give our show people an extra 17 minutes of cleanup time. But yeah. I think it was a really good thought and a good way to put the drivers out in front of the fans. I know the fans appreciated it.
All right, that's a wrap, fellas. Thank you for putting this thing together. Love it. Love you, mean it. Thanks to all you fans that tuned in out there to listen to us, both of you.
All three of you.
As always, we'd like to say a special thanks to the men and women that serve our military. Thank you so much for doing what you do so that we can do this. Each and every one of you, good night and God bless.
Live from the CRN studios in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, this is...